They just didn't like each other very much. Of course, I knew this counterworld of exiles existed now, of misbehaving Cleaved, staff unstaffed, bad ambassadors. But to see its doings astounded me. How had they kept going during the days of collapse, before God drug too?
Do you speak to any of the similes still?
Bren said. Jesus, I said. Why? Not really. I saw Darius at a bar, ages ago. We were both embarrassed. I mean, Embassy Town's too small for me not to run into them sometimes, but it's not as if we talk.
Do you know what they're doing?
I don't think there's a they, Bren. It's all disbanded, after what happened. Maybe some of them still meet, but that scene was ruined ages ago, after Hassa. Can you imagine now? No one cares about them anymore, including their speakers. Language. I laughed. It isn't what it used to be. Ilsib returned, scraping decaying city stuff off their clothes.
That's true, Bren said. But it's not true that no one cares anymore. You don't know where we're going. Your company's been requested.
What? I had not thought that this infiltration was about me, that I was a task to be fulfilled. Ilsib led me to a basement analogue and ushered me into the violet presence of Arieke.
Avis Benecho, Ilsib said.
They spoke my names perfectly simultaneously, at the same pitch, so though it was two voices, it sounded to me like one. The room smelt of Arieke. There were several. They were making noises, speech and mutterings of thought. One approached me out of the half-dark and spoke a greeting. Ilsib told me its name. I looked at its fan wing. Christ, I said. We've met. It had been a close companion of Serl Tesh Escher.
Tesh Escher,
the best liar in Arieke history. It was the Ariekes I'd once called Spanish Dancer. Does it remember?
Of course it remembers, Avis, Bren said. Why do you think you're here?
Bren and Ilsib gave to the gathered Arieke a clutch of dat chips. They took them quickly, their limbs and digits betraying agitation. Do Ezcal know you're recording them? I said.
I hope not, Bren said. You've seen? They're trying to do what Ez did when he was part of Ez-Ra. Make sure we can't build up a stock of recordings to make them redundant.
But you have.
These are just their public recitations, he said. They can't stop people tapping those. And why would they? They think because it's been said, because it's out there, the hosts have heard it, and it's lost its thing.
I looked one by one around the other Arieke there. There were other patterns on other fan wings I thought I had seen before. Some of these were in Serl Tesh Escher's group as well, I said. I looked at Bren. They were its friends.
Yes, Bren said. What they can do is lie, Bren said. Not that any of them's anything like a virtuoso as Serl Tesh Escher was. It was,
he shrugged,
a harbinger on the edge of something.
Your husband was right, Ilsib said, to stop it. In his terms, he was right. It was changing everything. There was a silence. This lot have had to carry on without it since. It's slow. They do what they can. Every Ariekes took a dat chip, each to a different part of the room. Each in similar elegant motion draped its fan wing over it. Their membrane spread. They withdrew, hunched into sculptures, made the room a drug house. With the volume very low, they ran the sounds. Responded instantly as I watched, trembling, judders of bio-ecstasy. I could see lights of speakers through taut fan-wing skin, hear the muffled chirruping of audio, the soul of Ez-Kal, or its spurious fabricated semblance.
How the hell can those recordings still work? I whispered. They've already been heard.
Not by them, Bren said. They wait. Bloody willpower. They fold up their wings when they know Ez-Kal's going to speak. They were already doing it with Ez-Ra. They make themselves hold out. They're trying to go longer and longer without. It was hard to imagine that the shuddering figures represented a resistance to the reign of God Drug. Still, they can take these now because they didn't take them before, Ill said. One by slow one, the Arieke rose. They looked at me, a strange reminiscence. We seemed to pick up where we'd left off. Spanish dancer came up to me. Its companions circled me. They said the succession of sounds in language that were me. I had not heard myself spoken for a long time. They said me first as a fact. There was a girl who was hurt in darkness and ate what was given her. Then they began to deploy me as a simile. We now, Spanish dancer said, when we take what is given in God Drug's voice. We are like the girl who was hurt in darkness and ate what was given her. The others responded.
Serl Tesh Escher was more than just the best liar, you know, Bren said. It was sort of a vanguard. It was never just about performing lies. Why would they be so interested in you if that was all, Avis?
How do lying and similes intersect? What other things in this world, one of the Arieke was saying, are like the girl who was hurt in darkness and ate what was given her?
It's been hard, Bren said. They were all scattered by the war.
The war of not enough drug. The war of Ez killed Ra. The war of the Walking Dead.
Now they've tracked each other down. They're going to keep going. They didn't worship Serl Tesh Escher, but it was sort of a figurehead.
Prophet, Il or Sib said. Why can't you tell Magdar, and even Cal? I said, then trailed off, because of course the group in this room was a conspiracy, striving to limit the power of the God Drug. Cal would try to sabotage it. I wished I didn't believe that. Bren nodded, watching me think.
Yeah, said Bren. Now, Magdar are different, but there's only so much they'll risk. They want to get out, now, and they can only see one way to do it, and that's hanging on. They won't risk anything else. They might even scupper it.
Scupper what? What are you trying to do?
Not me, Bren said.
All of you, you, I said to Ilsib. These hosts, what are you, plural, trying to do?
Magdar's way won't work, Bren said. Just to stave things off. That's why they won't take on Cal. It's not enough to try to keep everything going until the ship gets here. We have to change things.
While he spoke, the Arieke moved around me like flotsam in a current, and they said the phrase I was and tried to make it into new things. To think of new things they could insist that it, I, my past, was like.
Ezcal's not the only one we have to be careful of. Bren said. You have to keep this quiet.
I remembered the parting of Arieke when Hasse had come and killed Tesh Escher. You're worried about other Arieke, I said.
These speakers were dangerous before, Bren said. Sile was right about them. And so were there.
He shrugged and shook his head so I would know whatever phrase he used was inexact.
Ruling clique. And I don't know where they are now yet, but I bet Ezcal have an idea. Or Cal does. They've done business before. Why do you think he's so keen to get into the city?
I'd thought Cal's eagerness was newly visionary fervour. But back then, there in the Festival of Lies, Cal and Pear Tree looking at me. Jesus, Pharos. Sile had watched too. A conspirator then. Sile would approve of Ezcal now. Their priorities, like Calvin's before them, were power and survival. Sile's were always the city and its stasis. Those had overlapped once, but history had left Sile behind, hence his hopeless walk.
Cal might already have found his friends again, Bren said. This lot.
He indicated the room.
They were a threat once, you saw. Now.
He laughed.
Well, everything's changed. But they might still be a threat. Different. But maybe even more. Cal might not know this group still exists. If he ever knew.
but the Arieke he worked with before do. So if he finds them, this lot here had better keep very quiet. So we have to too.
How are they a threat? I said. I never understood. Why are they doing this? Whatever it is they're doing. Bren struggled.
It's hard to explain. I don't know how to say.
You don't know, I said. He bobbed his head in a half yes, half no.
How's your language, Avis? Said one of Il-Sib.
They spoke to Spanish Dancer, and it answered. I could follow some, and when I shook my head, Il or Sib would translate a few clauses.
It's not good that we are this. We wish to be other than this. We're like the girl who was hurt in darkness and ate what was given her, because we imbibe what is given to us by Ez-Kal.
There was a long silence.
We want instead to be like the girl who was hurt in darkness and ate what was given to her, and that we want to be.
And then there was silence again, and Spanish Dancer shook its limbs.
It tried to use your simile twice, contradictorily, Sib said, but it couldn't quite manage.
Now, Spanish Dancer went on, it's worse. We didn't expect this. It was a bad thing when we were made intoxicated and helpless by the god drug's words. Lost ourselves. But now it's different, and worse. Now, when the god drug speaks, we obey.
Yes, it said that with modulations that meant nothing to me, but no matter how alien the Ariekian mental map, sense of self, I thought that must be truly terrible. I'd seen the crowds respond instantly to Ez-Kal's instructions, choiceless about it.
We want to decide what to hear, how to live, what to say, what to speak, how to mean, what to obey. We want language to put to our use.
They resented their new druggy craving and their newer inability to disobey. This conclave could hardly be unique in that. But it dovetailed with what they had always wanted to achieve, their long-time striving for lies, to make language mean how they wanted. That older desire seemed to make them execrate their new condition even more than the other conscious Arieke.
We promised to bring you here, Bren said. Said it like a host.
He smiled at the child's oath.
They were adamant they had to see you. I better get you back before you're missed. Then Il-Sib have to go on. Other drops. These people aren't the only ones trying to find a different way.
What a dangerous circuit, through rebel cells in the collapsed, regrowing city. I'd always stressed, as I'd had it stressed to me, how incommensurable Tear and Ariekin thinking were. But I thought about who it was had told me that, those many times. Staff and ambassadors with a monopoly on comprehension. It was giddying to feel suddenly that I was allowed and able to make any sense of Ariekin actions. What I saw there was dissent, and I understood it. I saw only these liars, these fervent attempters to change their speech. Bren and Il-Sib might go from them to others trying to eradicate all their cravings and live languageless. From there, perhaps to those fighting to disobey Ez-Kal's casual orders. Then to others who were maybe searching for chemical cures. I wasn't even really participant on this trip, the first visit, though I was present, and Bren trusted me. He hadn't brought me out of camaraderie. I was there because I was a simile, and these dissidents wanted me for strategic purposes, as another group might request a piece of ware, or a chemical, or explosives. Embassy Town in its crisis was throwing up fervour. Give me 3 days, I thought, and I'd find people who believed that Ez-Kal or Ez or Kal was the Messiah or the Devil or both. That the ambassadors were angels or devils. That the Arieke were. That the only hope was to leave the planet as fast as we could. That we must never leave. So with the Arieke, I thought, and felt hopeful and depressed at once. Language was incapable of formulating the uncertainties of monsters and gods common elsewhere,
and I was abruptly convinced that these gatherings were the Ariekin cargo cults. Was I at a ghost dance? Bren and Ilsip were patronizing the far-fetched, millennial and desperate. I watched Spanish dancers struggle to express me, to make me mean things I'd never meant before, try to force similes into new shapes.
We are like the girl who was hurt in the dark and ate what was given to her because like her, we are hurt.
It circled me and stared at me and tried to say ways it was like me. Why won't Magdar's plan work? I said.
I know, but just say to me once why we can't just keep going until the ship.
Bren, Sib and Ill looked at each other to see who would speak.
You've seen how Ezcal's acting. It was Sib. You think it's safe for us to carry on like this?
And, among other things, Bren said, sounding, if I'm honest, disappointed. Even if it did work, you saw what happened to the Arieke when Ezra ended, without their dose. So what about when the relief gets here, when we leave?
He indicated Spanish dancer.
What happens then to them?
21. Another of our flyers disappeared. It had been doing rounds of farmsteads close to the city, as per Ez Cal's orders, asking for, insisting on, what we needed. It wouldn't be hard for us to dismantle the speakers if what we required wasn't forthcoming, and the Ariekin farmers knew that. The comms broke off and weren't re-established. We released VESP cams. Squads were subduing the last independent zones on isolated floors of the embassy, where squatter chiefs and their groups had refused amnesty. I was out at a barricade, a mass of broken furniture, odds and sods of houses, unneeded machines, but coagulated here, unusually, not with plastone, but a quick-setting polymer, a resin poured all over and set hard as brick and glass clear. The detritus was visible, like rubbish floating in water, frozen in a moment. We weren't at war anymore, and machines were cutting a V-trench walkway through the barrier, an excised wedge with perfect flat faces through the tough transparency and the crap within. The pass's edges were randomly punctuated with sectioned debris. I was with Simon. We were watching the gusting, staticky visions of VESP cams on his hand screen.
What's that? I said.
It was the lost Corvid. It was dead. The ground around it was scorched. There were heaps that might be human bodies. We came fast and armed over the wild, over paths made by Arieke and their animals and Zells, perhaps by wild outsider humans, exiles from Embassy Town and outland farms. We hadn't established contact with all of them. I was surprised by a brief and strong sense of loss for Floking, of all things. I tried to tell myself that this, what I was doing, was heir to that tough going with the flow, but I was hardly taken in. The airship was spread across the ground. We descended into a terrible aftermath. Eventually we went to work. The closest thing we had to a specialist took samples from what might be bite marks or burn marks on all the corpses. They were everywhere.
Oh, God, said our investigator.
There was Lowe, of Ambassador Lowgun. His chest was caved and cauterized.
That's not a crash injury. That's not a crash injury.
Vizier Jacques was there, and the edge of his wound, his missing arm, was neither shorn clear nor burned, but a rip from which he'd bled out. He'd died in excruciation, it looked like, scrabbling for his flung-away limb. The microbes the group had brought inside them had started the job of decay, and the Ariekin landscape in which they worked made for chemical oddness, so the rot wasn't like rot in Embassy Town. Everyone was dead. The expedition had included a rare Kedis functionary, a mature hermale I hadn't known.
Oh, Jesus, is Gorin, someone said. The Kedis are going to be...
We went slowly from body to body, putting off each as long as we could. The wind was cold as we picked through the remnants of our friends. We tried to gather them, Some fell apart, others we wrapped to take home.
Look!
We were trying to reconstruct what had happened, following the scraped earth. Reading it, it and the dead become hieroglyphs.
This was brought down.
A hot-toothed missile had burst into the flyer's side.
There are no predators like that,
someone started to say. But it came down slow enough for them to get out. That was I. They came out, and then they were hit outside. We found remnants of bio-rigging eggs from a recent barter trip, smears of yolk and fetal machines. The crew had been returning. The aioli we wore made our own voices loud in our ears, as if each of us were alone. Carrying our dead, we flew with carronades ready, looking for the ranch where our compatriots had been. It was announced by smoke. Outlying dwellings were ruined, the nurseries mostly gone. There was one hut that seemed still just alive and in distress, but we had no idea how to provide it a coup de grace and could only try to ignore its pain. There were no Ariekin dead. The kraal was empty. Dust-coloured animals ran away, and our arrival sent up rag-paper scavengers, flocks that moved like thinking smoke. Someone fired, and we all dived for the floor, shouting. The gun howled. It was of one of Embassy Town's treasures, an old Banshee Tech gun, cobbled into a form humans could use. The officer had shot it at nothing, of movement, a scuttling of tiny fauna. Ariekin Young had been abandoned and floated in a broth of dead. There were bodies of their elders. Hoof prints were everywhere. We set cams to follow what we thought might be trails. Body-thick arteries emerged from the farm, entangled in the earth and the tube that went over the rockscape toward the city. The pipeline was burst. The matter of it was spewed by a sabotage blast, the ground a quag of dirt and amniotic fluids. What's this? In a hollow were organic discards, frameworks like splayed fish ribs, skin in webbing between tines, a nest of intricate bones. These were remnants of fan wings. We gathered the little trophies. Behind us, we heard the distress call of a last building left alive. We'd put speakers in the farms with which we'd made contact, and the ongoing supplies of Ezcal's voice should have guaranteed us what we needed, but we'd had trouble before. Now we knew why. We sent crews and cams along the supply pipes and found other ruptures. We lost another flight, and then the officers we sent to find it. Ezcal went to the centre of the city to broadcast. Their journey there from Embassy Town was as extreme in its pomp as we could do then. There was pressure on those of us in the committee, still ostensibly Ez and Cal's organisers, Ez's jailers, indeed, to attend and wear smart clothes. Wyatt came with us. His reward for birthing Ezcal was that he was freed, kept under watch, but made committee. He was expert in crisis politics, and he wasn't a Bremen agent anymore, or not just then. Whatever happened later, we'd deal with later. If he could get away with a goddamn canopy, he would, I said quietly to Magdar. The god drug walked in the city, Ez looking down and unsmiling. Cal, his head still shaved in the style he now maintained, his stitches gone, but new tattoos mimicking them on his scarred scalp, looking up, occasionally glancing at Ez with energy and hate. They'd have us carrying them on our fucking shoulders. Magdar didn't smile. We were in the middle of that daily promenade from Embassy Town, behind Ezcal, surrounded by Arieke, who followed their instructions and shouted sort of cheers. Mag and Dar were stricken. Wait, I wanted to say to them, it's all right. There are others. There are people and Arieke looking for ways out. I wouldn't betray Bren, and I knew he was right. There was too much risk that Magdar might be unnerved by these plans. I don't know, said Magdar to me. I don't even know what we'll do when the ship comes.
We have to guard our resources, Cal said, after their performance, looking at footage of ruined farms.
Ezcal insisted that the rations of Embassy Towners be reduced. They ordered squads of constables to the nearest plantations and to those that provided our most needed pabulum. The attacks were becoming more frequent. Each group of officers that went out was accompanied, as they had to be for communication with those they were sent to protect, by an ambassador.
"It'll be fine," poor Shah said to me, preparing. "It's not the first time. We're used to it. We had to go out to haggle before, didn't we? Out of the city. It's the same."
It wasn't the same. Before, with Embassy Town and the world collapsing, they, and all the better ambassadors, had kept us alive with their desultory trades. This time they followed orders. I had originally thought that Cal would do as little as he could when he became part of God Drug Too. I was used to being wrong. As Cal did find Peartree, the erstwhile leader of that once powerful Ariekin faction. Perhaps Cal had his own investigators. Not all the city-dwelling Embassy Towner exiles would share Ill and Sib's perspective. They might have enemies, of whom some were perhaps agents for Ez-Kal. What had happened was that during one of their speakings in the city plaza, Ez-Kal had been suddenly in the middle of a small group of Arieke retracting and extruding their eyes and staring. Ez-Kal hadn't been afraid. One of the group had been Peartree. It accompanied Ez-Kal on their following performance, walking with them all the way from a meeting in Embassy Town. There were other Ariake with them, some closer to Ez-Kal than any humans, staff, committee or ambassador. My memory was unreliable, but watching the trids, I played hooky from my accompanying duties, I suspected at least two others might have been among those that had stood aside to let Hassa murder Tesh-Esher. I held my breath. I was on a side in a secret war. That time, Ez-Kal didn't speak for a while. They rationed their words. When they did, they announced that Cora Peartree was chief of this township. That this area was chosen from all the scattered remnant parts of the city to be Ez-Kal's node, and that its regent there was Cora. Ez-Kal couldn't speak except as the god drug, and the words they said were always compulsions. This wasn't like a momentary order to raise gift wings. It was a ruling, and when Ez-Kal finished speaking, the Ariake who had heard them remained ruled by Cora. The Ariake were very quiet, and then did not complain. For all I knew, Cora might already have been head of whatever clutch of streets it frequented. Ez-Kal might have changed nothing, except that by saying it, they changed it. There was now a collaboration, an allegiance between Embassy Town and this new heart of the city. I had just seen the tasks of Bren, Ilsib and their comrades get harder. I think I had been avoiding thinking about what Cal, Ez-Kal, really was, and were. Whether it was design, buffoonery or luck that underlay our new politics, I was not safe. Arieke from the new township Ez-Kal had inaugurated left the city with Portia, Kelsey, and the constables. These were now joint operations. Kelsey came back, but Portia did not. We had receivers and cams around all the farm grounds. They flagged us when anything beyond their expectation algorithms occurred. Which is how it was that all of us in the committee were buzzed instantly, and the footage relayed direct to our rooms at the next attack. Corvids headed out. They wouldn't arrive in time, but we had to act, even pointlessly. I was with Bren. We scrolled as fast as we could back and forth through chaotic images, scenes of tending, of interaction with farmhands, Portia, a pair of tall, diffident women, communicating necessities to the Arieke, convulsions as the tube passed goods that would be shat out in Embassy Town, snatches of conversation in Anglo-Ubic. The time counter skipped. This stat space was fritzing.
"We need Ursel," Bren said. "Do you ever?"
I shook my head. A constable was standing with mud across her. She stared anxiously, not at us, but over our shoulders, attempting to report.
"Sergeant Tracer at," she said.
There were violent noises. She watched something off screen.
"Under attack," she said. "Groups of hundreds, fucking hundreds."
Her transmission ended. The picture spasmed and was replaced by a view rapidly diminishing as the cam flew up. Tracer was lying on her back among human dead. She tugged off her Aeoli mask, an unthinking spasm of dying fingers. Images strobed. A great company of Arieke, moving quite unlike the farmhands. They galloped, they swung gift wings, they trailed blood. Liquid drizzled from weapons, a spray of dust. None of them spoke. They shouted wordlessly, voicing only attack meanings, without language. They beheaded a minor staff man I'd once known a bit. I held my mouth closed. One kicked him down, gripped him with its gift wing. Another swung a blade worked out of some Coraline stuff. They had bio-rigged weapons they turned on the farm walls. One Ariekis shot our women and men with a carbine, wielding the tear weapon with surprising precision. We saw them murder tear without weapons at all, sent jags of their own bone into human innards, or yank masks away, suffocating our people in alien wind. Bren sped up the footage. He brought us up to live shots. Carnage was ongoing. The officers were vastly outnumbered. They were trying to reach the Corvid and were taken down. Poor Sherb was shouting language to the attackers. "Wait, wait, no more of these actions," they said. "Please, we ask you not to do this." We lost that cam, and when it came back, poor Sherb were dead. Bren cursed. All the speakers we had placed in the farmland started suddenly to shout in Ezcal's voice. The god drug had found each other, here in Embassy Town, and were yelling down the line. "Stop," they said, and things stilled. I leaned toward the crude picture, the carnage, all the motionless Arieke. "Jesus," I said at the numbers. I held up my hands. Bren said,
"What are they doing?"
"Stand still," the god drug shouted across the kilometers. "Come forward. Stand in front of the dead ambassador." For seconds there was no motion. Then an Arieke stepped out of the crowd, took careful hoof steps into the cam's view. The others watched it, its back, its extended fan wing, stretched open, listening to the voice from the speaker, turning into and out of the light as it listened to Ezcal's voice. There were no other fan wings in the crowd of killers.
"That's a farmer," it said. "It's not one of them."
A large Arieke slapped two of its companions with its gift wing and pointed at the enthralled oncomer. It arced its back to display a wound. Ezcal continued to speak. "They saw the buildings hearing, and that one," I said. "That's why they stopped, not because they had to." One by one at first, then countless at a time, the murder squad of Arieke arched their backs. I saw the quivering of scores of fanwing stubs. I heard Bren whisper,
"God."
The Arieke displayed their wounds. Some made wordless sounds I'm certain were of triumph. "They know we can see them," I said. Following speechless gift-wing-jabbed instructions from their larger comrade, self-mutilated Arieke stood either side of the entranced farmhand and held it. It didn't even notice.
"Stop what you are doing. Release your grips," we heard Ezcal say.
Their language petered out. The farmer raised and opened its gift-wing repeatedly, obeying the instruction not intended for it. Those it was intended for ignored it, did not hear it, kept hold of their quarry. The big Ariekis tugged the bio-rigging farmer's fan wing. I winced. It twisted. Its victim screamed doubly and tried and failed to get away. Its tormentor's gift wing moved like a human hand uprooting a plant. The fan wing wrenched free. Roots of gristle and muscle parted, and with a burst of blood came finally away, pulling fibres out of the quivering back, trailing them. Fan wings are at least as sensitive as human eyes. The traumatized Ariekis opened its mouths and fell, stupefied with pain. It was dragged away. The deafener held up its grotesque, dripping bouquet. It made a loud, wordless noise. Triumph or rage. Ezcal were speaking again, I realized. They issued orders and were ignored. 22. That was the start of open war. We called it the First Farm Massacre, though it was the only one that we knew of. A horrible perspicacity. It took us days to understand what was coming. That final mutilation, by one Ariekis of another, was a recruitment. If the victim survived the shock and pain,
It was made another soldier on the enemy side.
How does it receive orders? I said, but no one could answer me. Perhaps there were no orders, only rage stripped of language. Can they think? If they can't speak, can they think?
Language for Arieki was speech and thought at once, wasn't it?
We didn't know whether to roll back our presence from the outlying farms or bolster it, so we tried both. More visceral pipelines blew. The pictures were the same in different settings. In a copse of trees like organs, in a dust bowl, in scree. Each time a burst of flesh and a litter of ruined cargo. Our stores depleted. Infrastructure wasn't the only thing attacked. After the farm massacre, the fan wingler swept into an encampment defended by other, hearing Arieki. This became the Cliff Edge incident. We had troops there with them, equipped with rare out tech, and they were able to shoot several of the attackers. But half our officers were killed by the time the marauders suddenly left, galvanized by some signal we couldn't understand. Perhaps by an empathy to tides we couldn't sense, like birds circling and become one organism. We didn't become inured to the footage. Ez Kal called the committee together and brought Cora, Pear Tree with them. Ez Kal told us they were making changes in the way the city was administered, as if that might help. Kal talked about making allegiances against bandits. I tried to listen, to understand the shape of politics now. From Bren's scorn, I knew that where there wasn't anarchy or secret renegacy in the city, there were strange comprador authorities like that of Cora. We had to witness absurd joint patrols. Under Ez Kal's orders, our constables policed outlands beyond the city, accompanied by Arieki dragooned into militia. An ambassador had to be present, of course, to transmit instructions on what Ez Kal stressed was God Drug authority. They took weapon training. Career bureaucrats attempted to transform themselves. The missions disaggregated, failed, as orders relayed by disorientated ambassadors were interpreted differently by Arieki and Ter. The Arieki were not even resentful, so far as I could see, and I knew now that there was such a thing as Ariekian resentment, only bewildered. The first three such patrols achieved nothing, and the fourth was attacked. When we reached the site, the rescue squad found our Ter people dead and their Arieki colleagues mostly gone, inducted no doubt by brute surgery into the rebels. The joint patrols were ended.
What if they don't want to fight, even after they've had their fan wing taken? What if they want to fight the ones that took their fan wing?
I, traitor, was at the secret liars club in the city again, so Spanish Dancer's comrades could consider me. They contemplated urgently, as urgently as Bren had brought me back through the city. Spanish Dancer itself wasn't there.
A fan wing isn't just an ear, Ill said.
She and Sib looked at me.
It hears, yes. It's the mind's main doorway, more important than sight. Their physiology's nothing like ours. If they've got no fan wing, they hear no sounds at all. And with no sound, they can't hear their own speech, which means an Arieki's can't speak, so it can't speak language. Perhaps there was no sense of truth left for them, or thought. Those rebels must be a fractured community, without speech, if there were a community at all. Language for the Arieki was truth. Without it, what were they? An unsociety of psychopaths.
So even if they didn't want to be part of the rebellion, I said, with their fan wings taken, they're
insane, or something like it.
Maybe some don't take part. Maybe they drift, get lost. Maybe they die. But they're not what they were.
It's no surprise that most of them join. The bandits.
Ilseb smiled without humour at Ez Kal's absurd terminology.
They can't all have been press-ganged, I said. The key cadre of that army were surely those that had deafened themselves. That despairing, literally maddening act of revolt had perhaps been performed independently, risen up in hundreds of Arieki. Perhaps a gathering had agreed together in a mass act of self-inflicted agony between Ez Ra's meaningless pronouncements, because we realized these dissidents had been attacking us if in more disorganized fashion before the Reign of God Drug II, had made themselves an organizing core. There might be room somewhere littered with rotting fan wings, the birthplace of this millennial mass. Each trapped in itself. God knew how many of them, a strike force of the lonely and lost. How did they move together? How did they coordinate their assaults? I thought again that they must be gusted by instinct and some deep grammar of chaos, that they could not plan. Maybe each strike wasn't a careful raid, but just a sharp edge of the random. I remembered, though, what had looked like interactions among the self-deafened during the first farm massacre, and was perturbed. They've started coming into the city in squads, Sib said. It wasn't a city, just tribes of junkies and thralls where a city had been. What they used to do was kill the other Arieke. If you've broken free from something like God Drug, maybe they thought those who didn't were disgusting. But they weren't killing them now. They were recruiting. Il Sib made simultaneous plucking motions, twisting imagined fan wings from their anchorings. I shuddered and turned it into a headshake and told them I wanted to see Spanish Dancer, as if it was a friend. I wanted to understand it, to make sense of its strategy for emancipation. Il Sib were pleased. They took me to the grotto under eaves fringed like fingers where the Ariekis lived. For quite a long time, we all sat silently. A hamlet of houses in the suburbs, gently regrowing, were taken suddenly down with bio-rigged weapons of serious power, cross-bred from existing strains. Informer Arieke working with the God Drug told us that something terrible was coming. All who live in the city and all who live in Embassy Town must stand against these attackers, Ezcal said, with Cora beside them. No matter how assiduously the compelled Arieke tried to obey them, those words were too nebulous to mean much. Ezcal never spoke an intoxicating order making all Arieke obey Corus. They must have been afraid of unintended consequence. I wanted to return, as often and for as long as I could, to the liars in the city straining to meet Tesh Esh's challenge. I was trying to learn how to get there, the route and strategies for the route, but still could only go when Il Sib and Bren came with me. After that dramatic attack on the remains of the city, Spanish Dancer and the other gathered Arieke were distressed. I recognized it. One of their number had left them. Il Sib listened. They argued with it. It told them. It said it was ashamed. Bad enough when the first God Drug had pushed them into trips. So much worse now they could see their tripping selves made to obey. It plucked itself. No, I said. It wasn't just, I thought, the loss of their, what, friend, to self-savagery, of mind as well as body, so it could not hear nor speak again. That must have hurt them. They wanted to be a hope against the revolutionary suicide of those that tore out their social mind with their fan wings, became nihilist revenge. Were there ranks among the languageless? Were those that made themselves an aristocracy above those attack recruited? I looked at Spanish Dancer's many dark point eyes, which had seen its companion tear its fan wing like trash, after their years of work, their project that had started long before this end of the world. By our barricade gates, in rump street markets, quickly tolerated, an economy of recycled necessities, people began to talk again about the relief. When it would come, where we would go, and what life would be like for Embassy Town as exiled to Bremen. Our now wild cameras inhabited the plains. Many broke down or their signals degraded, but some still got footage to us. Some were a long way into country, not punctuated even by farms, beyond the transport ducts. I heard rumours of certain footage before I saw it. I scorned the idea that it existed but was being kept from me. Wasn't I committee? But though it failed, I discovered that there had been an effort to do just that. I shouldn't have been shocked. An internal split, a craven and conniving column reporting direct to the God Drug. There wasn't even any reasoning. Secrecy was just a bureaucrat's reflex. There was no way they could contain these files. A day after the first stories about them started circulating, the rest of us got to see them. A group of us uploaded them to committee Datspace. Bren was agitated. I was taken aback by his impatience that he obviously had no idea if the whispers about what we were to see were true. I was so used to him knowing things he didn't tell me. I teased him about it in a rather brittle manner. We watched the CAM's memories, plenty of kilometres away, but hardly in another country. The viewpoint swept through narrows. I swayed to avoid overhangs the recorder had ducked days before. Some fool at the back said something like, "Why are we watching this?" Through a nook in rock, the CAM went to a valley of pumice-coloured earth. Bird-like suddenly, tree, then tower high, over the slope, focused where a river had been. We gasped. Someone swore. There was an army. It marched in our direction. There were not hundreds of Arieke, but thousands. Thousands. I heard myself say, "Jesus. Jesus Christ." We knew now why the city seemed depleted. "Pharotecton," I said. The microphones were crappy, but we heard the noise of the march, the percussion of hard feet walking not in time. The amputee Arieke shouted. They must not even know, not even hear their own constant catcalls. Machines among them walked at the wordless correction of keepers. The Arieke carried weapons. This was the only army on this world, and it was marching on us. The CAM went close, and we saw thousands of stumps of thousands of fan wings. Every Ariekes there was a soldier, not obeying orders, but trapped beyond society, in soundless solipsism, unable to talk, hear, think, but still moving together in that mystery fashion, sharing purpose without speaking it. They couldn't have a unified intent, but we knew they did, and what it was, and that we were it. 23. As well as the languageless and the SM for self-mutilated, at first we called the incoming army the deaf. Embassy Town's human deaf objected hard to that. They were right, and we were ashamed. Then someone named the attackers according to an antique language. It meant that same word, deaf, but rendered the surdy. Any insult seemed diluted, particularly because, fast bastardized or misunderstood, the term became the surd, and then misprisioned into the absurd. Hosts coming to kill us for sins we'd committed, if at all, without intent. Above all, it was their discipline that was absurd, impossible, the way without words groups would peel off from the main slow body, coordinated into snatch squads that tore through strange country and took apart our rangers or recruited new Arieke troops by ripping their flesh. Eventually and abruptly, transmissions to us ended. CAMs batted out of the air by breakdown, wind, or the sudden irritation of the enemy. We sent more, of course. Plans began. As our spies gusted out to search, we were breaching old agreements and habits of isolation. The CAMs showed us the coast, the gently toxic sea. We had a country on which the city sat, in which was Embassy Town. We weren't used to seeing that. I'd used cartographic ware in the Immer, but not these charts. We had a continent. It would have been hard for me to trace the outlines of Embassy Town, harder to draw the city, and I wouldn't even have recognised the shape of the landmass on which we were such a tiny point. Now we needed them. It wasn't hard to break those taboos and pull up maps. They'd never been forbidden, as I'd seen in the out, in some unsubtle theocracies. Only inappropriate, and old politenesses were dead. Our CAMs uploaded directions so we could trace the absurd. Their few, their first, the pioneers had also learnt the specific violence to make unspeaking comrades of their victims. How had it been? They had spread out of the depleting city, claiming farmers, on, past any urban gutwork, into the wonder grounds of nomads, claiming the nomads, the gatherer-hunters of unneeded or escaped technology, building. Someone might one day write the history of that trek, the recruiting crusade. There were more than all those stolen and violently cured rural addicts. I imagined these crazy, crazying figures emerging from wilderness like prophets, those distant Arieke, already alarmed or enraged at what they heard of their cousins in the city, reduced to zombie ecstatics. Or the craven desperate might, even if far off enough to have avoided the affliction, not have needed coercion to join the absurd. Perhaps there'd been a while before the army went in with regular, remorseless violence, and instead there'd been debates about endeafening among the not yet recruited in some settlements. Articulate, last ever uses of speech to argue for its eradication. I made Bren come with me into the city. It was easy to leave, though our borders were supposed to be controlled. Routes in and out weren't hard to learn. "They'll be here within 2 weeks," I said. He nodded.
"You see they're all in prime Instar," Bren said. "They're not protecting the old or looking after the young."
The young, though, might soon enough be grateful to them. Even uncared for, a few in each Ariekin litter must survive, and when they emerged to their adult form, woke into language, they would find a city purged of us, without god drug. The absurd would martyr themselves to that future. They'd put themselves beyond the reach of any compromise or agreement. We stuck to the safer sub-regions of the city. I found my way, my own this time, leading Bren, to where Spanish Dancer and its friends practiced lying, and I tried to help them find new ways to speak me.
"We're forming an army," Cal said. We were as disdainful as we could be at that.
"Gather many of you in the square and be ready to fight,"
as Cal broadcast to the Arieke. They told them to put forward soldiers. They demanded Mashi, volunteers. Mashi was the biggest aggregate of units with a name, and meant anything more than the largest exact number for which terminology existed. Kura. 3,072. Kura. Mashi, translated usually as countless. Ez Cal were demanding as large a force as the Arieke could give. Cal waved his hand. Beside him, Ez was like a ventriloquist's doll, existing only when he spoke or was spoken through. Wyatt watched Ez like an anxious relative. I wondered how many Ariekin soldiers the god drug would get, and whether the process of building that force would be violent. The natives in all the little villages left in the city, islands between zones of the deadly mindless, would try to obey in various ways. They knew the absurd were coming. The locals ruled, or whatever, by Sagis. Those over which Ez Cal had given Sagis aegis would surely provide most of the soldiers.
"One main force of Arieke to guard the city, stationed at all the weak points we have, and there'll be a couple of, well, of special squads prepared," Cal said at the committee meeting. I couldn't listen to this, these desperations disguised as strategy. I couldn't look at anyone else in the room. There was nothing we had that could hold off the oncoming army. When we were dismissed, I got my stuff together slowly, and after a moment realized it was only I, Ez, and Cal left in the room. I don't know how that happened. I wouldn't rush. I couldn't look at them. I was their enemy, and I had secrets that were mutinous. Cal slouched, looking tired. He looked shrunken, far off by the wall. A moment's illusion, and the chair seemed to dwarf him like a throne would a boy king. Ez stood like a surly courtier. They must be waiting to practice their necessary proclamations.
"Do you miss my brother, Avis?" Cal said.
"Do I? Vin? I... Yes. It was some way true. Sometimes I do. Do you?" Cal watched me from under his brow.
"Yes. I was angry with him before he died."
He paused.
"I was angry with him before that, then worse after, of course. But I miss him."
I tried to work out if I could glean any advantage on any axis by keeping him talking, but I could think of nothing to say.
"Please," he said angrily,
not to me. Ez looked up.
"I'll,"
Ez said, and walked out. It was the first word I'd heard him say for himself for many days. Cal didn't watch him go.
"Vin missed you," he said.
"Did he?"
Whatever had happened to Cal, whatever he'd become, I was sure that he saw me as I saw him through a window of memories that included mornings, evenings together, nudity, of fucking, sometimes beautifully. What could I do but remember the last looks Vin had given me? I'd seen that need that could perhaps have been given another name, and that perhaps Cal resented, because he thought his brother's affections were a zero sum, and that I'd stolen from him, because he didn't have it to give himself. I, to my utmost shock, choked, and had to close my eyes. A great big diffuse grief, not just for Vin, but some for him. I thought about the months I'd spent as Cal Vin's lover. I tried to recall a time when both of them had moved with me at once. I could not. Had they both touched me at once, ever, or had it always been one, then some languid time later, as I'd imagined, assumed, the other? I looked at Cal. Had he merely tolerated his Doppel's desires all that time? I thought, have you and I even been together?
Waking without him, I don't get used to it.
He spoke rapidly.
I'm not supposed to. Truth is, there are times it's not bad. The silence isn't always unwelcome.
I looked away from his awful smile.
Truth is, Avis, I can't tell you if I miss him. That's not true. I can tell you, and I do. But it isn't as clean a feeling as that. To have to say everything like I do, or did. Well, it's bad, and it's good, and it's bad. I've been to the retirement homes where Cleaved are. Normal ones, not like Bren, making trouble. I don't know. Is that me now?
He jerked his head at the door through which Ez had left.
That bastard, eh? It can be ugly how things go. I was going to say... I don't know what I was going to say. I'm doing what I have to.
What is it you're doing, Cal? Why do you have to? I said that, though I'd not intended to respond, or involve myself in whatever this was. We tried this once before, Cal. You made armies and it was a disaster.
Avis, please.
He shook his head and hesitated, as if he was trying very hard to think how to communicate something.
It was joint patrols that didn't work. You'll see what we do now. This is different. Anyway, what would you rather? We can't just leave them to come in. And haven't you seen?
He gesticulated again after Ez.
I can make them do anything I want.
Well.
Well, anyway, that's not really the point. I do. We do want protections around the city. We need it. But that's not the real point. The real point is the squads that go out. I've been thinking a lot.
He waved a hand at his throat, his voice.
About this. I've been thinking how to use it. I know why the first patrols went wrong. We just ordered them to patrol. That was much too vague. Tasks, though, that's different. Specifics, with beginnings and endings.
What tasks are you going to set them, Ez, Cal? I said. The slip, calling Cal that, wasn't deliberate.
You'll see, and you'll be impressed, I think. I'm not operating like you think I am. I know what you think I am, Avis.
I walked away. It was just unbearable. I didn't watch Cal, with Ez, inspect his Ariakeen troops. What a pantomime. I heard he made Magdar his assistant, had them talk for him. Ez Cal couldn't do it. It would have created a comedy of overwhelmed squaddies, mindlessly attempting to obey every word, whether it was an order or not. There were, in fact,
Kura,
some thousands, an unprecedented gathering. Through Magdar, Cal organized them into ranks and squadrons into units, each with its own commander. There wasn't as much of the chaos as I'd expected when our new defenders went to their outposts. They weren't enough. The absurd army outnumbered them by several times. I didn't yet understand,
had ignored him telling me that this warcraft and panicked pomp was a minor part of Cal's intentions. I didn't even notice that Magdar were gone for 2 days, alongside others, part of a squad I imagine Ez Cal gave some carefully chosen name. While they were, without knowing they were, I went again with Il Sib to Spanish Dancer as the army of absurd approached. I'd had enough of inevitability. In the city, outside Embassy Town, it felt, even illusorily, as if more than one outcome was possible. Ez Cal summoned us to a lecture hall. I went to that meeting, as I did to all of them, feeling like a spy. Not wholly misleading. The committee was depleted. In steeply banking rows of chairs, we looked down at Ez Cal in the centre. I sat by Southall and Simon. Magdar was with Ez Cal, their faces scuffed with injuries. By them was Corus, and there were other hosts in corners.
"We'd like to start with a silence," Cal said, "for Officers Bailey and Cotus, who gave their lives on this mission, for the sake of Embassy Town."
We waited.
"Let's make sure it wasn't in vain. Bring them in."
There was a commotion. We gasped and swore and drew back. What the guards entered and brought before us were enemies, too deaf and absurd. They were held in cuffs. They eyed us, their eyes in polyp motion. Their legs and gift wings shook in constraints. They tested their tethers with cunning. We watched them. Cal circled the captives, pointing out the injuries of the wilderness, the flanges of the ripped-out fan wing. He pointed at each thing he described with a long, thin stick. He was like a picture of an ancient lecturer in some pre-diaspora centre of learning. The attackers made noises as he rounded them, calls that sounded like halloos, like calls to gods. Cora and the other Arieke in the room watched them and kept up their own constant movement, twitches in a disgust echo of the prisoner's strainings. Our people had tracked a group of absurd, broken off from the main oncoming army to raid an isolated settlement. There'd been a fight. There'd been deaths on both sides. At last, Cal said, after unprecedented cooperation between the Tear and our Ariekian allies, we'd subdued and taken these absurd alive.
"We need to understand them," Cal said, "so we can defeat them."
We were here to take notes, to learn languageless behaviour, by experiments before cams in sealed rooms, by interactions between the absurd and our allies that would not be interactions but actions from Corus and its coterie, and ignored by the absurd, or if responded to in such ways that they were not discernible to us as reactions at all. The solipsism of those that had torn out their own fan wings seemed impenetrable. Perhaps some on the committee believed Cal's assertion that we were preparing to defeat them. But seeing him cajole Corus, speaking through Magdar again to avoid the tedium of repeatedly enthralling the Arieki's ally, to speak to the absurd, which they pointlessly attempted, making Magdar try it too, I think there must have been many who knew, as I did then, that his hope was to negotiate. But they were thousands who'd closed all the windows in and out of themselves, cut off language, become monads full of murder. No knowledge we had could make much difference. With the scrags of Wyatt's arsenal and Ez Cal's Ariekin force, we might kill some, but the city was still shrinking, inhabitants dying, self-mutilating, running to nearby settlements where speakers would broadcast the god drug voice. They were more absurd than Arieke that would fight by us. Magdar spoke in language. Then one or other would say,
"They can't even fucking hear us,"
while the absurd snarled.
"So show them," Cal said. "Make them understand."
And this exchange would continue and mutate, upsetting and pointless. The whole Ariekis would repeat its words. Magdar and the other ambassadors would make gestures with their hands. Our enemies came closer. The languageless pulled against their bonds. They watched their interlocutors, ignoring overtures and focusing on actions. I saw sudden shared moments of attention, responding to idiosyncrasies of Sagus's motion invisible to me. The absurd glared at each other. They made noises without knowing it. They got each other's attention with spread-out eye tines, made motions to indicate things to notice. To the extent they could, they moved, taking up positions while Cal and Ez-Cal flashed up images on screens, played vibrations to them through the floor. They walked, triangulated, parted. I didn't say anything fast enough, but when they suddenly tried to attack an Arieki's guard, I realized I'd known it was about to happen. They were subdued before they could use their own strapped bodies as ungainly bludgeons, but the synchronicity of their movements astounded me. It sent me back to my husband's books.
"How do you say that in language?" I asked Bren.
"Like, that one," I pointed. "Which glass do you want, that one?"
"It would depend."
He looked at the glass by his counter.
"Talking about that one, I might say..."
"No, I don't mean any specific one, but in general. That one," pointing. "Or that one," moving my hand. "Thatness."
"There's nothing."
"No?"
"Of course not."
"Thought so. So how would I distinguish that glass and that one and that one?" I tallied them with my finger.
"You'd say the glass in front of the apple and the glass with a flaw in its base, and the glass with a residue of wine left in it."
"You know this. What are you asking? They taught you these basics, didn't they?" "They did," I said. I was quiet a while. "Years ago." I spoke in years again, not kilo hours. "But if you were translating an Arieki saying, the glass with the apple and the one with the wine, to me, you'd probably just say, that glass and that one. Sometimes translation stops you understanding. I'm not fluent. Maybe that's helping me right now."
"Translation always stops you understanding," he said.
"What is it you're thinking?" "How many days before they get here?" I said. "Can you get hold of Ilsib and others? Any you can." He narrowed his eyes but nodded. "We need to go. Get Ilsib or whoever to contact Spanish Dancer and the others. I'll..." I stopped. "I don't know," I said. "I don't know whether... Maybe I can tell Cal."
"Tell me," Bren said. "I thought you'd despaired."
"I did too."
"What then? Tell me."
I told him. Revelation.